Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Tomorrow Never Knows, a Beatles podcast. And I've got something very special for you today. I don't know about you guys, but the White Album is probably my favourite album. I toss and turn between the White Album and Revolver. So I'm posting up some White Album interviews with all of the Beatles. Look, I do this for historical value. I think it's a good thing to have these interviews in as many places on the internet as possible to keep them preserved. So just sit back and enjoy.
Music from the new Beatles double LP that's released on Apple Records tomorrow. The show is brought to you by the Daily Express, and with me tonight, Paul McCartney and Judith Simons of the Daily Express. We're going to talk about the LP, and I know that you're going to enjoy it. Well, Paul, I'd like you to talk about the LP in general.
What do you want to say about it, Tony?
The songs, I think, perhaps a surprise to some people, because I think a lot of people expected another step from Sgt. Pepper.
Well, it is another step, you know, but it's not necessarily in the way people expected. On Sgt. Pepper, we had more instrumentation than we'd ever had, more orchestral stuff than we'd ever used before. So it was more of a production. But we didn't really want to go overboard on that last time. And we've tried to play more like a band this time, only using instruments when we have to, instead of just using them for the fun of it.
Is this for any sort of concept of being able to do the things live?
Yeah, and also for the concept that we like playing together. That's the main concept.
It's becoming quite a word. The first track on the LP is back in the US.
It sure is, Tony, you're quite right, boy.
Can we just talk about this particular track? Because it's a...
Back in the USSR.
Yeah, it's a wild rocking thing.
Yeah. That's a track which... it just sort of, you know, came... Chuck Berry once did a song called Back in the USA, which is very American, very Chuck Berry, very sort of... you know, he was serving in the army, and when I get back home, I'm going to kiss the ground of America. You know, I just can't wait to get back to the States. And it's a very American sort of thing, I've always thought, that kind of. So this one is like about in my mind, it's just about a spy sort of who's been in America a long, long time, you know, some fella who's been in America a long time, and he's picked up and he's very American, but he gets back to USSR, you know, where, and he's sort of saying, you know, leave it till tomorrow, honey, to disconnect, you know, to disconnect the phone and all that. And come here, honey, and with Russian women and that. You see, what it is, it concerns the attributes of Russian women, soul element created by George's guitar and heavy brass.
Lipside thrasher. Cliff Bennett is releasing it as a single. Have you heard this particular take yet?
No, I haven't heard this particular take, but it concerns the attributes of Russian women, soul element created by George's guitar and heavy brass. I like this kind of music, you know, I like most kinds of music. So that I haven't got a bag, as they say, except the big black one in the hall outside. And this, you know, this Obladi, Oblada, and USSR, and Martha and that, like a three different songs altogether. And in fact, all of mine are on the LP. But I can't really say anything about that. I'm pretty diverse. You know what I mean? I haven't got one sort of thing. So this, I've no idea why it's Jamaican or anything. Just because I like that kind of thing.
Did you write the song on your own? I mean, this is a combination of the Lennon-McCartney thing.
I think it was mainly me. John's a bit more Nigerian influence. I still like it because I like it, you know. This is a favourite of mine. The idea of the happiness of the warm gun thing is from an advert in an American paper. Where it said, you know, happiness is a warm gun sort of thing, and it was sort of get ready for the long hot summer with a rifle, you know, come and buy them now. It was an advert in a gun magazine, you know, and it was so sick, you know, the idea of come and buy your killing weapons and come and get it. And it was just such a great line, that happiness is a warm gun, that John sort of took that and uses that as a chorus.
Yeah.
And the rest of the words I think they're great words, you know. It's a poem. It's a poem when it finishes off, happiness is a warm gun. Yes, it is.
Sounds like he's probably fairly serious about...
Oh, it's as serious as anyone ever gets, you know. It's not deadly serious. It's just words, and if you sort of really taxed him on it and said, you know, would you be willing to die for these words? I'm sure he wouldn't. I'm sure it's not really serious. But, the good words... I'd stick up for anyone who's sort of worried about him. You know, it's just good poetry. And you see, I just start singing some words with a tune, and you know what I mean. I don't ever write a song thinking, "Now I'll write a song about." I do sometimes, but mainly I don't. I'm doing a tune, and then some words come into my head, and these happen to be Mark and my day. Though I spend my days in conversation, it doesn't mean anything, you know. Although it just happened to come into my head. So that's what this song's about. So it is about my dog. But I don't particularly want her to remember me. Like, the song is about Martin. I don't mean it. But, like, you make up songs. You don't make up songs trying to make a serious... I don't ever try to make any sort of serious assumption. I just make it up because I've got to have words to use it. So I make up any kind of... So, you know, you can read anything you like into it, but really... it's just as a song. It's me singing to my dog.
Well, Evan, what period? How long a time has it taken you all to get this whole LP together and write the songs?
Well, since we were in India, we started writing this batch of songs, and we've written a few since. But this is mainly the Indian batch that we sort of finished. Sounds like consignment of eggs or something.
I think it's quite a beautiful song.
Yeah.
Thank you, Terry.
Well,
it's simple in concept because you couldn't think of anything else to put on it. And that's what I was saying about the Sergeant Pepper thing. Maybe on Pepper we would have sort of worked on it until we could find some way to put violins or trumpets or something on it. But I don't think it needs it, this one. You know, it's just... There's nothing to the song list. It is just one of those pick it and sing it and that's it. The only point where we're thinking of putting anything on it is where it comes back in at the end. So it stops and then comes back in. But instead of putting any backing on it, we put a blackbird on it. So there's a blackbird singing at the very end. And somebody said it was a thrush, but I think it's a blackbird.
We'll take your word for it.
I don't know.
Rocky Raccoon. I was sitting on the roof in India, just sort of with guitar. John and I were sitting around just playing guitar, and we were with Donovan. And we're just sitting around enjoying ourselves. And I started playing the chords of Rocky Raccoon, you know, just messing around. And originally it was Rocky Sassoon. And then we started making up the words, you know, the three of us, and started just to write them down. They came very quickly. And eventually I changed it from Sassoon to Raccoon because it sounded more like a cowie. So there it is. It's just, you know, these kind of things, you can't really talk about how they come, because they just come into your head, you know, they really do. And it's like John writing his books, you know, I don't know how he does it, and he doesn't know how he does it, but he just writes. It's like any writer, you know. I think people who actually do create and write, you tend to read in and think, oh, well, how did he do that? But it actually does flow, just flows from into their head, into their hand, and they write it down, you know. And that's what happened with this. I don't know anything about the Appalachian Mountains or cowboys and Indians or anything, but I just made it up, you know. And the doctor came in stinking of gin and proceeded to lie on the table. So there you are.
I suppose the idea to do the thing with some sort of an American Western accent also happened this way, did it just...
That was just a joke, you know. As most of it is.
I'm going to leave it all to you. It's called Why Don't We Do It on the Road? What, I suppose somebody will say somewhere.
Dance, Tony, dance.
There's also another one of yours called I Will. We've covered the areas where the songs just seem to come to you and just happen this way. You get ideas. Obviously, this particular track happened the same way. The twangy guitar type thing is used again on this one. There's a slight influence, not a slight influence, there's a lot of sort of, I suppose, music that you could call rock and roll on this LP, isn't there?
Yes, well, we are. You know, we've always been a rock and roll group, I suppose. You know, it's just that we're not just completely rock and roll. That's what I was trying to say before about Oglody, USSR. birthdays, you know, all the different kinds of things. We're not just completely one kind of group. Because, like, when we played in Hamburg, we didn't just do rock all evening, because we had these, you know, sort of fat old businessmen coming in and saying, or thin old businessmen as well, were coming in and saying, you know, play a mambo, you know, can you do a rumba? And we couldn't just keep saying no, you know, so we had to get into mambos and rumbas a bit. So that this kind of thing is led to it's a pretty sort of smoochy ballad, I will. But we have to do that kind of stuff, you know. So we always played a lot of kind of things, you know. So I don't know if he's getting off the subject, but that's why, like, there's a great variety in this LP. Because in our things, in everything we do, you know, we just haven't got one bag, the Beatles, you know. I mean, because on one hand you'll get something like I Will, and then you'll get Why Don't We Do It in the Road, you know. Just completely different things, completely different feelings, but it's me singing both of them. It's the same fella, and I wrote both of them, you know. So that you can't explain it, you know. I don't know why I do Why Don't We Do It in the Road, shouting it like that, with the piano and just sort of a rock and roll thing, and then do this sort of smoochy Latin American girl from Ipanema.
Take it away, Paul. Rock and roll.
The next track is Back in the Old Rock and Roll Star, which I guess we've already really covered, but once again, this is a very loud type, if you like, discotheque type.
Good story about that, Tony. What happened was The Girl Can't Help It was on television. That's an old rock film.
Right.
With Little Richard and Fats Domino and Eddie Cochran and a few others, Gene Vincent. And we wanted to see it, so we started recording at 5 o'clock, and we said, well, we'll just do a backing track, we'll make up a backing track. So we kept a very simple 12-bar blues kind of thing, and we stuck a few bits here and there in it, with no idea what the song was or what was going to go on top of it. We just said, okay, 12 bars in A, then we'll change to D, and then we'll do a few beats in C. You know, we really just did it like that random thing. And then we came back, because we didn't have time for anything else, and so we just recorded this backing. And we came back here to my house and watched The Girl Can't Help It. Then we went back to the studio again, and then made up some words to go with it all, which were, they say it's your birthday, well, it's my birthday too, yay. So this song was just made up in an evening. You know, we hadn't ever thought of it before then. And it's one of my favourites, you know, because of that. I think it works, you know, because it's a good one to dance to. Like a big, long drum break, but just because instead of, well, normally we might have sort of 4 bars of drums, but with this, we just said, no, keep it going, you know, we're all light here, just drums plodding on. So, no more explanation. It's a cold birthday.
Sign is another track that you use acoustic guitar, and there's probably more acoustic guitar used in this set of tracks than you've ever used before.
Yes. Well, it's the same thing again. You know, we wrote them with guitars, and John, on a lot of those, John picks the guitar, because he learned off Donovan when we were in India. Donovan showed him how to finger pick. You know. So he sort of stuck it in everything then. And while he was learning finger picking, I was sort of playing acoustic as well, you know, acoustic guitar. So that's it. That's why they crept in like this. We decided not to try and cover them up like we might do normally, and just use an acoustic guitar instead of, say, a piano or an electric guitar or anything. So the only thing about this one, however, says, born a poor young country boy. And I was born in Walton Hospital, actually, so it's a dirty lie.
Paul, lots of the songs that you do, I imagine the production ideas come to you when you get into the studio after you've written the song. It is true, I mean,
That is quite true, Tony, that is quite true. Accurate observation.
Beautiful. A track, and a lot of the tracks that you've selected to comment on during this show tonight are some of the big, you know, loud, uptight ones.
Well, the only ones I'm commenting on are the ones I sort of wrote or have a lot to do with. Because I don't want to go commenting on John's songs in case I'm wrong, you know, because he wrote them, you know, most of them. So I don't really want to go and say, anyway, Helter Skelter, yeah, that came about just because I'd read a review of a record where it said, and this group, it was about some group, I can't remember, saying, and this group really goes wild, and they just, it's like echo on everything, they're screaming their heads off. And I just remember thinking, oh, it'd be great to do one, the pity they've done it, you know, must be great, really screaming record. And then I heard their record, and it was quite straight, and it was very sort of very sophisticated. It wasn't rough and screaming and tape echo at all. So I thought, oh, well, we'll do one like that then. And I had this song called Helter Skelter, which is just a ridiculous song. So we did it like that because I like noise.
That's the way we'll hear it. Helter Skelter, by Talkie Picture Feel, somebody once said in the last couple of days. And in fact, this is the sort of thing that I think when I heard it first, the Russ Colombo type thing came to mind immediately. So why?
I've never heard of him. Russ Colombo, yes, Russ Colombo. Why did it come to mind? What do you mean?
Well, I mean, it was just that sort of, I suppose, 1920s song. And you go, I can imagine the thing with the guy on stage with the, in this case, you maybe with the megaphone and the cymbal thing and the precise type backing.
Yes. Well, I like, you know, my dad's always sort of played fruity old songs like that. And I like them. I like the melody of old songs. And the lyrics as well, you know, there's some old lyrics like, you know, sort of a woman singing about a man and she's saying, something about I want to have his initial on my monogram. So, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Just good lyrics and just good thoughts that you don't sort of hear so much these days, you know? And so I would quite like to have been sort of a 1920s writer, because you know, I like that thing, you know. You know, the top hat and tails and sort of coming onto so this kind of number. I like that thing. But, so this is just me doing it, pretending I'm living in 1925.
So it's Honey Poe, and we'll have Brian on the show tonight. Thanks very much for the time and your comments, which I know so many million people out there are going to be very interested in. The final track, I suppose, is the wrap-up to the LP, end of the show tonight. And I would imagine that a lot of people who are known as standard singers or middle of the road singers in America are probably going to record this track.
Yes, it's very much that kind of track, you know. It's a John wrote it mainly. It's his tune, you know, which is surprising for John because he doesn't normally write this kind of tune. It's a very sweet tune, and Ringo sings it great, I think. The arrangement was done by George Martin, because he's very good at that kind of arrangement, you know, very sort of lush, sweet arrangement. And that's all I can say about it. It's very sweet, and in fact, it's good night.
Interview Ringo Starr, London, December 1968. Last week was quite a controversial week for the Beatles. How close are you? We've had reports that you're not as close as you used to be and that the Beatles aren't as rich as everyone thought they were and
that
they might
true.
Have to close down Apple.
Yes, well,
How true is this, Ringo?
Well, should we take them one at a time?
Yes.
All right, what was the first one?
Are you as close?
Yes. You know, there's that famous old saying, you always hurt the one you love. And we all love each other and we all know that, but we still sort of hurt each other occasionally, you know, where we just misunderstand each other. And we go off, you know, and it builds up to something bigger than it ever was. And then we have to come down to it and get it over with, you know, and sort it out. And so we're still really very close people. What's the second one?
Do you see the Beatles going on like they are at the moment for a long time in the future, or do you see a split very soon?
It depends what you mean as a split. I mean, we split...
Go your separate ways and not...
Completely, no, we'll never go... Oh, I can't say never, but I mean, we won't go our separate ways after this album. And we'll always be tied up with each other in some way. You know, because we've signed a lot of papers since we've stayed together for 20 years or something. And Apple closing, you know, is silly. We have spent a lot of money, you know, because we don't earn as much as people think, because if we earn a million, then the government gets 90% and we get 10,000. And we didn't, you know, sort of realise how much we were spending, you know, like someone pointed out, to spend 10,000, you have to make 120. But we just spend as 120. So all we're doing now is tightening up on our own personal money and on the company's money, you know. We're not just giving as much away and handouts and things like that, you know, and as many projects. We're going to cut down a bit till we've sorted ourselves out again and do it properly as a business.
Do you feel you have been a bit careless with that?
Yes, I think we have. But it's not that we're broke. On paper, we're very wealthy people. Just when it gets down to pound notes, we're only half wealthy.
Are you concerned about public opinion? because there is a suggestion that your popularity isn't as strong as it used to
be. No, it isn't. It's because, you know, when we first started, we were the nice, clean mop tops and every mother's son, and everyone loved us. And then suddenly, you know, there's a few things that they don't understand and they don't get and, you know, they don't like. And so it turns them off us a bit, you know. But I still think we're very popular. It's just a, you know, we're men now, you know. We're a bit older than those lads that started out. And we've got a lot of things to do, you know. And you've got to do a few of them. It doesn't matter, you know, what people say. You can't live all your life by what they want. You know, we can't go on forever as four clean little mop tops playing She Loves You.
You seem to be the more industrious people.
No, I'm the laziest people, actually.
Are you?
Yeah, see, that's just my image. You know, I'm quite happy to finish an LP and go and sit back. But I can enjoy myself just sitting back, you know, and playing at home with all the toys and the kids and the wife. I enjoy playing with the wife.
We're all still good pals, and we're all good players, and we like to play together.
Yeah. You're all friends again now, which is lovely.
We've always really been friends. I mean, we've had our little niggles.
Yes.
But, I mean, we've always talked to each other, you know.
Yeah.
So it hasn't been as...
Even through the Cold War.
Even through... Well, you know, it's never been as tough as the press sort of made out, you know.
Yes.
We did at least acknowledge each other all the time.
Mm.
You know, we
spoke
like,
to each other on the telephone.
Yes, and saw each other. Yes. I mean, I saw everyone.
Well,
I mean, you know,
it must
maybe it's because I'm so nice.
It might have something to do with that, too, then. Don't you think that
could happen? No, it's down to the four of us. Not any one of us can do it. I mean, Paul used to be the one to get everything together.
Yes.
You know, he'd phone us up. John and I'd be sitting in the garden. He'd phone up saying, well, should we do an album? We'd say, oh, yeah, okay. Because what are we doing sitting in the garden? We're going to do an album, you know. He used to be the one to get things moving, really.
Yeah. Would you like to do it again?
Well, I wouldn't like to go out on the road and everything again. I think we could... The thing we could do was record together
yeah.
again. That's about it. I wouldn't fancy
but
going on the
concert.
Road anymore. No.
Not a stage concert again.
No, we'd have to get all that makeup on and high-heel sneakers. Well, I'm not shaving my beard off for anyone. Maybe I'll just have it dyed gold.
You just grow into being a myth.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like...
It's a lovely idea of your being together.
It's like, what, you know, I don't know, when those old vaudeville stars coming back, they never make it. I mean, I'm not saying we can't make it. It's shitty, see. You can't answer these questions, in reality.
Well, there's no question you're not making it. I mean, you have a ready-made audience, wouldn't you? I mean, the thing about it is, I mean, you've all got your own...
Yes, but we stopped touring even, you know, after a couple of years because of what the albums. We could never reproduce that on stage.
It's in the lap of the gods.
Well, we're the gods.
Right.
Another good quote. Mm. Also, you see, even when we first... listen to all our albums.
Yeah.
I mean, just listen to them and you can see where we're all going, you know.
Mm.
And you'd have to melt all that again, you know.
Mm.
So that's the difference. Mm.
Do you think you'll be happy to go on in show business?
Yes, I'm Mr. Show Business, you know. Yeah, I'm the group, you know. I quite enjoy all that entertaining.
Yes.
It's just strange for me when I'm up front, you know, after all those years at the back.
Yeah,
and then suddenly I'm up there dancing and singing. And, you know, I have to get used to that a bit more.
Have you had dancing lessons, Andrew?
No, I had one when I was about 8, a tap dancing lesson, but a friend and I went to the co-op. It was above a co-op shop in Liverpool.
Yeah.
But there was too many girls there for us, and we left. I've been trying to get back ever since. Yeah, we're just these, you know, when you're 8, you know, you're going through that scene about, no, they're only girls, you know. They're not really human. When you get to 9, then you start to realise what it's all about.
Looking back, what do you look upon as the most momentous moment in the career of the Beatles for you?
I think the first one's always the sharpest, and that was Love Me Do, you know, getting right up to 47.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
That was like the most incredible scene that we had a record out, you know, that we had a bit of plastic with us on, for me.
Mm.
Then you got like the plane, it was another whole different scene. And then you got like America was another scene. You know, we had a lot of scenes, but the first one is the most powerful, and that was Love Me Do for me. I mean, that was more powerful than I think Please Please Me making number one.
Yes.
Just the idea of being on a bit of plastic, you know. It was really incredible. After all those years of playing.
When you look back on it, how do you react about that period, you know, which was the most amazing period, really, wasn't it?
It was the worst time and the best time in my life.
It was.
I mean, the best time because we played a lot of good music and we had a lot of good times, and the worst time because it's not, touring is never a pleasure. You know, just playing was always the pleasure, but what goes with it, you know, and especially for a group who was as big as us, where it was like 24 hours a day with no break, with press and people fighting to get into your room, you know, yes, climbing 25 stories of drain pipes, knocking on your window. I mean, it never stopped, and that was the, wasn't the good part of it.
No.
But the show wasn't, I mean, no one ever complained about them. It was just that everything that went around us would have, if we'd have carried on, I personally would have gone insane.
You would have done.
You know, and I also think we, if you do too much touring, and in those days we only played 12 numbers, we got really stale as musicians. And you can tell when you get stale, you know, you don't feel good. So then the shows tended to be off, but no one cared. No one knew if it was good or bad. You know, we'd do the same show in two towns. One, we'd come off feeling good, and one, we'd come off feeling bad, but we'd get the same reaction to both shows. No one would know the difference, bar us.
That is slightly inadequate feeling, isn't it?
When you feel like, what am I doing? You know, I'm playing the biggest load of shit in the world, and people are standing and cheering.
Yes.
You know, which isn't good for you.
Not very fulfilling.
No,
is it?
In no way.
All I'm doing, I'm acting out the part of Beetle George, and, you know, we're all acting out our own parts. And, you know, the world is a stage and the people are the players. Shakespeare said that. And he's right, you know.
Do you expect another part later?
Oh, many parts. Yes.
Whichever. Is that why you've come to terms with it?
Yes, because you just do whatever you can do. I mean, even if it's been a Beatle for the rest of my life, it's still only a temporary thing. And, I mean, really all we did was get born and live so many years and
labeled.
And this is what happened. We, you know, I got born seemingly to become Beetle George. But it doesn't really matter who you are or what you are, because that's only a temporary sort of tag for a limited sort of period of years.
Do you enjoy it now?
It's the same as any job, you know. It's up and down, you know. Life is up and down all the time. And maybe for us it goes up higher, but it comes down lower. Relativity. So, you know, if we have a bad time, it's really bad. And if we have a good time, maybe it's really good. But it's only the same, you know. It's relativity. So it's the same law operates for everybody.
Yes,
but they only, you know, it's the same thing, like they see showbiz, that thing, and all they think of is, oh, all that money you've got, and you've got a big house and car and all that sort of thing. But the problems that come along with that, you know, are incredible. And I can tell you, everything material that we have, every £100 we've earned, we've got £100 worth of problems to balance it.
Yes.
It's very ironical in a way because, you know, we've all got maybe a big house and a car and an office. But to actually get the money that you've earned is virtually impossible. It's like illegal to earn money. Well, not to earn it. It's illegal to keep the money you earn. You never give me your money. You only give me your funny paper. You know, that's where we get bits of paper saying how much is earned and what this and that. But you never actually get it in
pounds, shillings and pence.
Yes. But I think it's another of life's problems that you never actually solve. Or it's very difficult to solve. And anyway, you've just got to, no matter how much money you've got, you can't be happy anyway. So you have to find your happiness with the problems you have. And you have to not worry too much about them. And Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. So the thing about it, Hare, the word Hare is the word that calls upon the energy that's around, yeah, from the Lord, whichever Lord you like, really. But yes, this, in this case, it happens to be Krishna, which is like the words that Christ said became the Christian Bible, and the words that Krishna said became the sort of Hindu Bible called the Bhagavad Gita. So it's just by merely the repetition of that. It's the same if you were just to go around chanting Christ, 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 Christ. If you say it long enough, then you build up this identification. Whatever you identify with, you become one with it. So it's really a method of becoming one with God.
I see.
It's just another process. It's really the same sort of thing as meditation, but this is a thing. It has more effect, I think, or quicker effect, because music is such a powerful force. And he said, God likes me when I work, but loves me when I sing. But it's really the same end as meditation. The response that comes from it is in the form of bliss. That's what I say, the more you do it, the more you don't want to stop it, because it feels so nice, peaceful. I believe in the saying, if there's a God, we must see him. And I don't believe in the idea, like in most churches they say now, you're not going to see him, he's way above you, just believe what we tell you and shut up. Well, the whole thing is a different way. It's a process of actually having that realization and direct God perception, which is the thing you can attain through chanting and through meditation. And then you don't have any questions. You don't have to ask the vicar about this, because it all becomes clear with the expanded state of consciousness. But you don't get it in 5 minutes. It's something that takes a long time. So it's like to give peace a chance, or all you need is love. The thing is, you can't just stand there and say love, 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 or peace, 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 and get it. You have to have a direct process of attaining that. It's like, you know, Christ said, put your own house in order. Maharishi said, for a forest to be green, each tree must be green. So the same, for the world to have peace, each individual must have peace, and you don't get it through society's normal channels. And that's why each individual must attend to himself and get his own peace, and that way the whole society will have peace.
Georgian, what about these rules? Do you support all these things that the Krishna movement support? I mean, they don't approve, for example, of alcohol and drugs, and they recommend a certain kind of food, vegetarian sort of methods.
Well, there's certain...
And no sex unless you're going to have children, right?
Non-illicit sex, which means... So there are members of this Radha Krishna temple who are married and who have children. So all that means is, you know, not raving around, knocking off everybody. You know, because that's then becomes a bit of discipline, because all those emotions like that, lust and greed, are things, emotions that have got to be curbed. I believe in being a vegetarian, because meat's one of the worst things anybody can eat.
What about the other ones?
Which ones?
No alcohol or drugs.
Yeah, well, I don't drink alcohol personally, because, I mean, that's one reason why I smoked pot. I mean, when I started smoking pot a few years ago, I hope they won't edit this piece out, because I'm not really...
I hope they won't. I'm sure they won't. I won't let them.
Okay, the thing was that as soon as I smoked pot, I gave up alcohol, because I realised the only reason I was drinking alcohol was to get high. So I got high much easier without any sickness after it. But the thing is now that to really have pure state of consciousness and good perception that is above the normal state of consciousness that we're aware of, then you must have a perfectly clear mind. So alcohol and any sort of drugs is out. But I haven't taken anything like that personally for a long time. In fact, even before I got busted, I never took it. It just happened that, you know, that they seemed to bring it with them that day. So, but that's a different story. Edit. Anyway, yes, I agree with that, because in order to have, to really get high, you've got to have a pure system, you know, your mind and body's got to be clear. But I've been writing for a couple of years now, and there's been lots of songs I've written which I haven't actually got around to recording. So, you know, in my own mind, I don't see what the fuss is, because I've heard these songs before and I wrote them, you know, quite a while back. And it's really nice that people like the songs, but...
You don't look upon yourself as a late developer as regards songwriting then, because it's sort of kind of hit everyone that way, you know.
You know, late, early, you know, what's late and what's early.
But you hadn't really got the reputation yet.
I mean,
I
wasn't Lennon or I wasn't McCartney. And, you know, I was me. And the only reason I started to write songs was because I thought, well, if they can write them, I can write them. You know, because really, everybody can write songs if they want to, if they have a desire to, and if they have sort of some musical knowledge and background, and then it's by writing them, the same as writing books or writing articles or painting, the more you do it, the better, or the more you can understand how to do it. And I used to just write songs, I still do, I just write a song and it just comes out however it wants to. And some of them are catchy songs, like Here Comes the Sun, and some of them aren't, you know, but to me there's just songs and I just write them, and some will be considered as good by maybe the masses and some won't, but to me they're just songs, things that are there that have to be got out. And it's just the first line, something in the way she moved, which has been in millions of songs. It's not a special thing, but it just seemed quite apt.
Something in the way she moves attracts me like no other lover.
And I usually get, like, the first few lines of lyrics and melody, both at once. And then I finish the melody usually first and then have to write the words. Like, there's another song I wrote when we were in India, and I wrote it straight away, and the first verse I wrote just said everything I wanted to say, like that.
I look at you all, see the love that's sleeping, while my guitar gently weeps.
And then now I need to write a couple more verses, and I find it much more difficult. But John gave me a handy tip once, which is once you start to write a song, try and finish it straight away while you're in the mood. And I've learned from experience, yeah, because you go back to it and then you're in a whole different state of mind and it's more difficult. Sometimes it's easier, but on the whole, it's more difficult to come back to something. So I do now try and finish them straight away. Here Comes the Sun was the same period. We had meetings and meetings and all this, you know, banks, bankers and, you know, lawyers and all sorts of things, and contracts and shares. And it was really awful because it's not the sort of thing we enjoy. And one day I didn't come into the office, I just sort of, it was like sagging off school. And I went to a friend's house in the country, and it was just sunny, and it was all just the release of the tension that had been building up on me. And it was just really nice sunny day, and I picked up the guitar, which was the first time I'd played the guitar for a couple of weeks because I'd been so busy. And the first thing that came out was that song. It just came, and I finished it later when I was on holiday in Sardinia.
Don't forget to subscribe to us so you don't miss an episode. And if you have any questions or a topic that you think you would like us to cover, or even if you consider yourself a Beatles expert and would like to join us on this podcast for an episode, you can email us at beatlemailbox, that's one word, beatlemailbox@gmail.com. So, love to hear from you, and enjoy and have a very Beatle-ish day.